Welcome to another Carlo and Lade Sports Show. I'm Robert Laidlaw.
And I'm Sean Carlin. Now, Robert, we have a very special guest. It's a real treat for us today. You had recently been on a wonderful holiday, which we have talked about, but I believe somewhere over in Europe, at a reasonably high point for us, especially coming from South Australia, you met climbing royalty. Tell us about it.
Yeah. One of my wife Sue's aims, bucket list, was to go to the Swiss Alps. So we went to Zermatt. And we're up there on the Matterhorn viewing platform, and I got to talking to a couple of American gentlemen who just happened to be mountaineers, and there was one gentleman, Kurt Wedberg, who we now have on the show today.
Welcome, Kurt. Welcome to our little sports show, and welcome to Australia.
Well, thank you. It's great to be in Australia. I've never actually set foot on it, but I feel like I'm already there.
I was going to say to you, Kurt, we probably use the term mountain very loosely in South Australia, where we're from. We have a place called Mount Lofty, which is one of the highest points in Adelaide, and that's a whole 727 metres. Would you be interested in climbing that?
That would be awesome. Let's go.
We also have Mount Woodroof. It's 1435 metres, and on the eastern states, we have Mount Kosciuszko, which is something like
7,000 feet.
7,000 feet. Gee. And of course,
it's the highest mountain on your continent, actually.
It is. And, of course, when you talk about Mount Everest, which you've been up three times, that's getting close to 30,000. So they're incredible differences.
That's correct.
Yeah. So just tell us a little bit, your first time that you went to Mount Everest, I believe it was 1995. Tell us about I believe there's a lot of planning, like 2.5 years or something. Tell us a little bit about the planning and what it was like to the first time you ever did at Mount Everest.
Boy, it takes a lot of planning. It was about a 2-year process, and it revolves around getting the permits in place to climb it. In this case, we were coming, Mount Everest sits on the border of Nepal and Tibet. And the first time I went, we went through Tibet, and that requires permission from the Chinese government. And so that takes a while to secure that permission. And then there's a whole slew of logistics. You know, we had 20 people on the team, and you got to plan for food for 20 people for 2 months on a mountain, and so figuring all of that out and where we're going to get all that food. Is some of it going to come locally, or are we shipping it over? And then of course, once we get it all together, we're going to box that up and ship it over there. And then you got oxygen, which requires hazardous shipping, not anybody. You can't just put a bunch of oxygen bottles on an airplane like luggage and ship that over. So there's some big logistics there. And then getting your transportation and how you're going to get all that stuff into base camp getting your Sherpas put together. And so all of that takes a whole lot of time. And it's a big project, just organizing it all. And you know, you feel like you've already climbed an expedition before you even set foot on the mountain, just by all the logistics that are involved in doing that.
Wow.
It's a monumental task. And I imagine, Kurt, obviously you've been in the outdoors and probably doing climbing for most of your life. But if someone in your group in that time, in terms of their physical preparation and even when they're there, their ability to cope mentally, that must be a bigger challenge in itself.
That's correct. It's a great question that actually a lot of people don't consider, is that, you know, the harder things get physically, the harder things get mentally as well, and the two play off each other. And you know, so sometimes you might be working really hard physically, and the harder you work, then the more opportunity there is in there to for the doubt to set in, and you have to wrestle with that, and it works the other way around too. You know, when you have, say, for example, a very windy day or stormy day, and, and it starts to work on you a little bit mentally, you know, that makes it harder for you to dig deep physically to keep on going with something like that. And so they play off each other in a very interesting way. And it's kind of a dynamic process that you have to monitor and manage the entire time you're there, you know, for a whole 2 month period.
Is that something that you find when you're taking, you know, you have your own company where you're taking people and guiding people to Mount Everest and other places around the world? Do you find that's the biggest challenge for you dealing with people in that sense and be able to get them through those difficult times that they might face?
Well, yeah, that's exactly it. They, I think one thing that is important when you're guiding people is, you know, you need to be able to put yourself back in their shoes and realize, okay, this might be their first time getting to a certain elevation or pushing themselves in this way. And so remembering what that felt like for me the first time and being able to convey to them some of the feelings they probably are feeling at the time and being able to work through those I think that kind of gets into the art of guiding, if you will, is, you know, being able to help them with that and set them up for success to keep on going. And a lot of times it's just a matter of realizing, oh, he understands how I feel right now. He knows how hard this is. And a lot of times just that understanding can go a long way towards helping them reach new heights.
Now, Kurt, what about obviously there's a lot of risks involved in climbing Mount Everest and other mountains. What's the hairiest situation you've been involved in that the risk sort of seemed monumental and you're able to conquer it?
Well, I have to say that being on the north side of Everest was probably the biggest one I've had to overcome. You know, you find yourself up at over 28,000 feet in elevation, and the route is called the Northeast Ridge, and as the name suggests, you're on this ridge line with about 10,000 feet of exposure below you, and the rock is this kind of loose shale with downsloping slabs on it, and you're looking across there going, well, okay, I need to cross this ridge line, and you know, a fall would be a pretty long fall at that point. And I guess really in reality, if it comes down to 1,000 feet or 10,000 feet, both of them will do the trick. But there's something more intimidating when you're looking down 10,000 feet. And so one of the ways we protect climbers in that is we anchor in fixed line onto the route. And we clip into that fixed line. But at that elevation, we're not bringing very thick line because it's too heavy. And so it's the line is about 6 millimeters thick. And you anchor that stuff into the rock and clip yourself into it as you're climbing. And you size up the risks that are there at the moment, and you just decide for yourself, okay, am I okay with this or am I not? And if you are okay with it, you're going to accept that risk and just go, and you need to be all in at that point. There can't be any lingering doubts. And if you don't like the margin for safety that's there, then you just need to turn around right there. But once you're making that decision, you're going, and you need to have that confidence in what you're doing at that point, because just that doubt alone will end up contributing a lot to that mental aspect of things that makes things so difficult up there.
Gee, it obviously takes great courage to commit to that climb and finish it. I was doing a little bit of research on what you've done, and I found it interesting looking, and you'd have to forgive me my ignorance in terms of history, but I noticed that you climbed with George Mallory Jr. in 1995. And of course, his grandfather was in an expedition in the 1920s and may have been the first person to summit Mount Everest.
That's correct. Yeah. That is the same George Mallory, the grandson of the same man who disappeared in Everest in 1924. And He was a great guy. He and I became fast friends on that trip, and a super strong climber. And he finished what may or may not have been unfinished business by his grandfather when he stood on the top of Mount Everest and made it back down safely. And so he and I talked a lot of that. And, you know, because as that story goes, his grandfather was with Andrew Irvine. The two of them were climbing together that day, and they were spotted at a feature called the second step, which is widely considered the crux of that whole climbing day. And then right after that, a cloud came over the summit, and they were never seen again. And so the, you know, our conclusion is that, well, if they could have made it up the second step, then chances are they probably did reach the summit. But if they didn't make it up that, obviously they didn't. And I'm somebody who likes to believe they actually did make it. I think he was completely capable of it. If you look at the climbs in England that he was doing back in that time period, the difficulty of what the second step was well within his ability level, and so I personally think he did it, and that's that. That is something I just, you know, my own opinion on it, but it's kind of nice to, I just think it's kind of neat to think that they actually did make it up. But, and my ideal scenario, honestly, about it would be, I would love to be able to figure out proof that they actually did make it, but for the climbing community not to give them credit for the first ascent, because climbing's a round trip affair, and he might have made it up, but he didn't make it back down. And so I'd love to see that proven. But yeah, getting back to what you were saying, George Mallory Jr. on that trip, he was a lot of fun to have, and a very neat guy and a very strong climber.
Gene, now Kurt, when you first ascended the Mount Everest, now everyone uses the analogy of conquering their goals, whether it's running a marathon or whatever, as their Mount Everest. Now, for you, what was it like to reach the very top and stand on the top? What was the feeling like?
Well, it's, you know, I still remember that all these years later very clearly. I was climbing by myself. My partner that morning, Steve, he and I had separated a little bit below the final summit pyramid. I needed to stop and go to the bathroom, and he kept on going. And so I continued up there by myself, and that final summit pyramid, you kind of climb up it, and it, where it tops out, it sort of levels off, and then you look up about 100 yards away, and you can see the actual summit. And so I had, at that point, my oxygen was on about 2.5 liters a minute of flow. And as I topped out to that last little plateau, my partner Steve was just on his way down, and he and I got a summit photo together. And he says, "Yeah, that's the summit right up there." And I said, "Great." And he reached into my pack, and he turned my regulator up to 4 liters a minute. And that made me walk faster. And it also brought along a lot of emotion along the way. And so for that last 100 yards, I was kind of taking these steps up there all by myself and letting the emotion, run right over me. And by the time I got to the top, I was just in tears. I realized, my gosh, I'm sitting by myself on the highest point on our planet, you know, looking all around on a beautiful, clear day with no wind. And, you know, how blessed was I to have my health and the ability to do that, and to have hit it on a great day, and to be up there. And it was just this overwhelming feeling of emotion and accomplishment. And I just let it soak in there for, I would say, 15 or 20 minutes. And then I realized, you know, that's about long enough, and I've got to turn around and get on back down. This climbing's a round trip affair, and I was only halfway at that point.
Wow. Gee, Kurt, that's a fantastic story. Now, we're going to have to finish soon, but we definitely will have you on again, because we haven't even touched a third of the questions we wanted to ask, and your story is just sensational. So we will definitely have you on again in a month or two when you're available. So thank you very much for your time. And so ends another Carlin Load Sports Show. I'm Robert Laidlaw.
Thank you, Kurt. That was fabulous. I'm Sean Carlin.